Today's episode of The Athletic Support is brought to you by Felix and Norton Cookies, a Montreal legend baking smiles since 1985. Who doesn't remember their first time biting into a soft, buttery, chocolate-filled Felix and Norton cookie? Well, now you can have that feeling right in your own home because they have a new next-day home delivery service across the greater Montreal area. Just order online by 9 p.m. and you'll have your delicious treats at your door the very next day. Simply go to felixandnorton.com and click on Montreal Delivery. If you do that, the Athletic Support listeners will also get 10% off on your first order simply by punching in the promo code HOCKEY. 10% off by going to felixandnorton.com, clicking on Montreal Delivery, putting in our promo code HOCKEY. And once you do that, let me tell you, it is well worth it because you will have these bags of frozen cookie dough. The cookies are already shaped. They're shaped like pucks, appropriately enough, and they're all separate. So all you have to do is take the bag, you put it in the freezer, or take the bags, because I suggest getting more than one, but take the bags, put them in the freezer, and then whenever you feel like it, let's say after the first period of a hockey game, you're like, it'd be nice to have some warm cookies. You have Felix and Norton sitting in your freezer. All you have to do is walk over to your kitchen, take out the bag, take out the little hockey puck cookies, put them on a baking sheet, pop them in the oven. 10 minutes later, you have warm, gooey, buttery, lovely Felix and Norton cookies right in your house with a tall glass of milk just in time for the second period to start. Does that not sound great? Well, take advantage of this offer because let me tell you from personal experience, I can tell you that having Felix Norton cookies warm and in your hands 10 minutes after you thought of it is a great feeling. So again, go to felixandnorton.com, click on Montreal Delivery, punch in the Athletic Support's promo code HOCKEY, and you'll have 10% off on your first order. It is well worth it.
Everybody, welcome to the Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens. This episode is on Thursday, August 13. I am Marc-Antoine Godin. Today with me, Arpin Basu, as usual, and our colleague from Philadelphia, none other than Charlie O'Connor. Charlie, Arpin, hello, guys.
Hey, how's it going? Charlie, welcome to our podcast. This is great that we have another voice to talk about this series that got off to an interesting start in game one, but took a bit of a twist today, out of nowhere.
Yeah, not to say the least.
So obviously, we're recording this not long after Marc Bergevin announced that Claude Julien was taken to hospital by ambulance overnight. Hours after the end of Game One, that the Flyers won 2-1 with chest pains, and that he will no longer be coaching in the series. This is obviously terrible news for Claude Julien, first of all, and we all obviously express our hope that Claude is okay, although Marc Bergevin seemed to suggest that things were looking up by the time he made the announcement on Thursday. But I'm curious to know, from your perspective, we'll start with you, Charlie, I guess, like, well, do you think this will actually have a tangible impact on this series?
I guess it's tough to say from my perspective. Obviously, the most important thing here is Claude Julien's health, and we're all hoping that that he comes out through this okay. As for the impact on the series, I know personally, I think really highly of Claude Julien as a head coach, as a tactician, as someone who can make adjustments in game and throughout a series. And I don't know, how much he'll be involved. Obviously, they say he's going to be away from the team. He's not going to be on the bench. I'm not sure if the coaching staff will be able to include him in those conversations or if his doctors just want him not to be stressed and he's going to be basically cut off from the group, or, to what degree he's going to be cut off from the group, I don't know. But to me, Claude Julien was one of the biggest reasons, top five reasons why I thought Montreal could potentially pull an upset, because he's a coach who's won a Stanley Cup and I view him really highly. So if he's not involved in the series, I think it hurts Montreal. I'm not incredibly familiar with Kirk Muller and his his coaching ability. I know he coached in Carolina, but it's not a slight against him necessarily. It's more just how highly I view Julien as a coach and in terms of getting the most out of his teams.
I think, I think what the Canadians from a tactical point of view, from a leadership point of view, are certainly going to lose something with Claude Julien not being there. But I wonder if it's going to change positively something in terms of the emotional impact that it might have on the team, an extra motivation. Shea Weber referred to it as much today, saying that it's not as though the team was lacking any sort of motivation prior to that, but it could serve in some emotional way into an extra oomph, an extra jolt of emotion and motivation for them. So we'll see, because it can really go both ways. It can, things can unravel for the Canadians, but they could also rally around that situation and really make, you know, go get one for the Gipper, as they say.
And that's, you know, that's, I guess, the normal reaction here. I'm wondering to what extent Claude will not be involved in the decision making here. I mean, assuming that he's okay, and again, I think all of this is under the assumption that Claude is going to be okay, because I think Marc Bergevin did suggest it on numerous occasions. So I don't want anyone to think that we're overlooking Claude's health. But I mean, if he is okay and he's able to watch the games, I have trouble believing that he won't be involved in the decision making between games. It's more of the in-game stuff that's intriguing to me, because really the series against Pittsburgh Penguins turned the moment that Claude Julien decided to drop his top line of Phil Danault with Thomas Tatar and Brendan Gallagher and sort of mix all his top three centers up. From that point on, the Canadians outscored the Penguins 5-0 in that series. So it wasn't the only reason why the Canadians won that series. It was definitely a turning point. It was a clear and defined one. To what extent Kirk Muller will feel comfortable doing something like that on his own in the middle of a game, I'm not quite sure. I mean, you know, he did coach for 3 years in Carolina. They did not make the playoffs in any of those years, so he's never actually coached an NHL playoff game as a head coach. So I don't know. I mean, Kirk Muller's role on the team has always been one of he's the player guy. He's the player's coach. You know, he's the guy who's the former player who played recently, has, you know, a strong history with these guys. Most of these guys watched him play as kids, and so has that good relationship with them, and has always sort of played the good cop to whichever head coach he was working under as bad cop, you know, for Claude Julien or Michel Therrien or what have you. So it's gonna be a change in dynamic for sure for the Canadians, and it's gonna be interesting to see to what extent Claude will want to do that. But one thing that's interesting, I think that's worth pointing out, is that Dominique Ducharme's role on the team, on the coaching staff, he does not look after forwards specifically. He does not look after defensemen specifically. His actual role on the team is in-game adjustments. That's what he is there to do. He is tasked with watching the game, kind of as a step back, not up top, but behind the bench, but watching the game, and during the game, making suggestions to Claude as to what he should do within the flow of play. So he actually has a guy whose job is already to do that. So that's, I think, will help maybe transition away from having Claude during for in-game adjustments. The fact that they actually have a coach whose primary job is that will help to a certain extent. But moving on, I wanted to set up game two a little bit. And I think, you know, all three of us had sort of a similar view of how game one went. Charlie, from your perspective, that second period is obviously what the Canadians are going to be clinging to, and they're going to try and bottle that and reproduce it over a full game. What do you think the Flyers took from that second period that they can use against the Canadians in game two?
I think the big takeaway for the Flyers was just how important it is against this Montreal team to take care of the puck. And, you know, I certainly don't want to say that it was just the Flyers that were making mistakes and that's why they had a bad second period. They made mistakes because Montreal forced them into mistakes. They put pressure on them and the Flyers didn't react particularly well in the second period to that pressure. But it just served as a real firsthand reminder of the way Montreal tries to beat you, and they do just basically try to pressure you to death. And the Flyers lost complete control of the tempo of the game because they were unable to deal with that pressure. And, you know, one thing that that a lot of the Flyers players said in the round robin games that I found really interesting was that after those games, a lot of them were coming out of the games thinking that they approached those games with a playoff mentality, with playoff intensity, but their opponents didn't. And the one thing that they still had yet to face going into these games wasn't that it wasn't that they weren't playing like it was playoff hockey, is that they hadn't faced a team that was that had punched back and then forced them to elevate their game even further in the way that happens in the playoffs. Well, I think what happened in the second period was a team finally punched back. And what really, I think, bodes well for the Flyers, from my perspective, is that the Flyers then responded in the third period and played what, in my opinion, was their best period of the game, even though they didn't score a goal, in terms of playing their north-south straight-ahead forechecking game and dictating the tempo and outshooting Montreal, even though Montreal was the trailing team. And obviously, that's not the way that score effects tend to work. So for the Flyers' perspective, I think what they can take away from it from a positive standpoint is that, you know, we finally got punched in the mouth and we showed that we can get up off the canvas and counterpunch. And that was something that they hadn't faced in the round robin, that they were forced to face in game one, and I think they responded to it well. At the same time, they know firsthand now that they cannot be as cavalier with the puck as they were in the second period, or Montreal will really burn them.
It goes to show how well this team is prepared, because it's a bit baffling to me that teams that were taking part in the round robin did not embrace the occasion to say to really get ready and find that gear, that playoff gear, right away, that they the way that the Flyers did, and as favorites in this particular series. But I think that we can say Stanley Cup contenders too. They've positioned themselves well in that regard, because they're ready for that rhythm. But it's funny how perceptions can differ, because you say that the Flyers played their best period in the third period last night, whereas the Canadians say, well, we struggled in the first, we were nervous, we had not played in many days, etc. But as the game went on, we got better and better. So from the Canadians' point of view, that third period was a split between the two teams, and they were very much in it. So they look at this first game and say, sure, we lost that first game, but we're able to skate with these guys. We're able to play against these guys. And the mentality is just not the same.
No, I agree. And I was listening, if you go and read Charlie's piece from after the game, but even the other comments from the Flyers, there was a tinge of disappointment in how they performed in that second period, even though they won the game. And on the Canadian side, what I found so striking, as you just mentioned, Marc-Antoine, was that they took some solace in the fact that they could play with the Flyers, which doesn't seem like much of a winning mentality to me. And really, you know, to me, that game one for the Canadians was a massive missed opportunity, as I wrote after the game. But, you know, just to reiterate here, everything Charlie just mentioned was the Canadians' advantage. Like, they had that advantage that the Flyers had not faced an opponent who had taken the game seriously. They had not faced an opponent who had punched back. So this was their chance to really, this was their only chance, in my opinion, to take advantage of that one specific aspect of this series where the Canadians were in playoff mode and the Flyers kind of were not. Even if they themselves were playing in playoff mode, they were not involved in playoff type games up until game one. And it kind of showed in that second period. The Flyers started off poorly. Like, if you remember, that second period started with a 4-on-4. The Canadians were all over them during that 4-on-4, and it really set the tone for the period where the Flyers were really on their heels and were never really able to get off, get back on their toes until the intermission, despite the fact they scored that goal, which, you know, was kind of a result of carelessness by the Canadians, I think, more so than anything the Flyers really did. But it was obviously a very important goal. But, you know, the Flyers have to be feeling really good about the fact that they did not play their best game. They had an entire period where they looked like a shell of themselves, basically, and still came out with a win.
Yeah, I would have to agree. And I think the reason why it maybe comes across that the Flyers were disappointed in their performance is because they know just how well they can play. And it's, you know, as someone who's covered the Flyers for quite a few years, when they weren't a particularly good team, it's kind of amazing to hear, you know, guys like Claude Giroux and guys like Shane Gostisbehere, who were on those mediocre teams, you know, speak with the kind of confidence in this particular team's ceiling that they have over the last 24 hours, but they believe that they are a really good team. And winning a game like this with their B game, it's disappointing to them because they feel like they should be able to play with their A game every single night. And, you know, I think that does bode well for the Flyers, you know, making a long run, because it shows the expectations, the internal expectations they have for themselves in that locker room. But I agree that, you know, if you take a step back and look at it objectively, the fact that the Flyers didn't play their A game and still came away with the win. And really, you know, we can talk about the second period, and the Montreal Canadiens obviously were the better team in the second period, but this game certainly wasn't the type of game that you would say that, like, Carter Hart stole the game. It was a close game that maybe in aggregate Montreal got, you know, maybe slightly better chances, you could argue, but it was a pretty evenly matched game if you look at the full 60 minutes. It's just that the Flyers believe that they can play a lot better than just being evenly matched with the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, yeah, I mean, ultimately they got the lead because of a power play goal. They scored a winner on a turnover, you know, a bad way for the Canadiens to exit the zone with Sherratt and Byron mishandling the puck along the boards. Probably that Kulak would have liked to keep a better eye on Joel Farabee there in front of the net. But apart from that, 5-on-5, it was fairly well disputed. I understand the Canadiens to consider that they can, you know, they can play, you know, an even game against those guys, because as we have seen so many times with the Canadiens, as long as the special teams are not involved and we stick to 5-on-5 play, they might keep the score low, but they are likely to remain in the game. So I understand where they come from when they take solace in the way they played in that first game. But I totally agree with what Arpin said in regards to a missed opportunity. And where there was also a missed opportunity, and maybe the Charlie, you can enlighten us more on that. But Alain Vigneault didn't seem to take any effort to take the Sean Couturier's line away from Philippe Danault, even though he had the last change. He seemed very comfortable, whatever the matchup would be, to send his top line out there and do the job. And that's was the same attitude that Mike Sullivan had with the Penguins during the play-in. So I think that as long as the Canadians are able to have their two young centermen and their offensive lines away from Sean Couturier, their odds of winning games are better. So yesterday, Vigneault, for the most part, kept Couturier against Danault, and still the Flyers came out on top.
I would agree with that. I was surprised that the Flyers were okay with that matchup. Perhaps they think that Couturier will get the better of that matchup, considering the fact that he has, you know, Giroux on that line as well. I sort of expected that Vigneault might try to chase the Couturier matchup against Suzuki, in part because there could be a mismatch there with Couturier against such a young center, and in part because the wingers on that line, you know, are so good in Tatar and Gallagher. So I was mildly surprised that that Vigneault seemed to kind of, maybe not chase, but at least accept the Danault-Couturier matchup. To me, one of the more interesting, games within the game, looking back on it, was that I did not think that the Flyers' second line of Kevin Hayes, Scott Laughton, and Travis Konecny played a particularly good game. I thought they were trapped in the defensive zone quite a lot. And going into this series, they were the Flyers' hottest line. The chemistry they had shown, particularly in the offensive zone, was really impressive. And they got a lot of time against the Suzuki line, and I thought the Suzuki line played quite well. Obviously, the Flyers got the win, so I'm not sure if they're going to make any dramatic matchup changes. Maybe Vigneault will think that, you know, the Hayes line will do better against them next game. But I will say that I maybe expected Vigneault to send Couturier out there more often against the Suzuki line, because I thought he might view that as a matchup he could exploit. And as you said, it's just not something he decided to do.
But, you know, it's something that I actually like And it goes back to what you were saying about Giroux and Voracek being so confident about how good the Flyers are. I think the coach needs to send that message as well sometimes. And I thought, you know, right from opening faceoff, that was the first thing I noticed, is that, you know, obviously Claude is putting in his lineup card first, and the LA saw that the Phil Dano line was starting and started the Sean Couturier line and said, I'm not going to let you dictate how I deploy my players. And that, yeah, I think, is an important decision for a coach to make in a playoff series, especially early in a playoff series, to let the other coach know, I'm not going to go hiding from your guys. My guys are better than your guys. I'm going to put them out there and let's see what happens. You know, let's go at it. But I have confidence in my guys to face anyone that you could throw at them. And I'm not going to let it disrupt how I run my bench. Because at that point, if Claude Julien knows that Alain Vigneault is going to do either to get Couturier against Suzuki or to get him away from Dano or however you want to look at it, once you realize that, then Claude can just start putting Dano's line out all the time and like just take him off after faceoffs. Like he could start playing with Vigneault's bench management a little bit in that way and dictating what the Flyers do. Once it becomes clear that you're trying to avoid a certain lot, like you're trying to avoid a certain matchup. And so for Vigneault right off the bat to not only, I think, recognize that and also send his own message, say, I'm not going to let you tell me what to do, was a good move on his part. And you know, I mean, it's not like the Couturier line got totally buried by the Dano line. That would be totally inaccurate. But they played basically to a standoff, which I think from both teams' perspectives is probably not that bad of a thing. Obviously, from Julien's perspective, if they can go, you know, stand off with the top line, then he's happy. But even from Vigneault's perspective, he's got to look at his bottom three lines and the Canadiens' bottom three lines and say, well, I like my bottom three lines better than theirs. I'll take my chances. If those two lines go to a draw, I'll take my chances with the Hayes line against Suzuki or, you know, my third line against Kotkaniemi or what have you, even though it's not crazy for him to think that, in my opinion.
No, and it's he would be right to prefer his bottom three lines compared to the Canadiens. I mean, you look at the way that the wealth is spread around in that lineup. When you got Jacob Voracek, who plays on the third line, and James Van Riemsdyk on the fourth, the Canadiens have Max Domi in their you know, on the fourth line that is a more of a profile player that can, you know, can represent an interesting opposition, but he has nobody to play with right now, and that's, you know, that situation of a deeper lineup on Philadelphia's side could really come to haunt the Canadiens during that series, because it's not just the Couturier line, it's they're because of at least one key threat on each line, the Flyers are that much deeper.
Yeah, these games within the games within the series, I love. This is totally my speed, and
same here, man.
Yeah, it's a fascinating point you make about the idea of just kind of throwing Couturier out there and saying we're not going to worry about matchups. That very well might have been his strategy there, and if so, you know, props to Alain Vigneault for trusting his players. And you know, this kind of goes back to the point you were making in your column this morning, or I guess it would have been this morning, very early this morning, right, when it was published, that it's just the different mentalities of these teams coming out of game one, in that Montreal seemed happy just to be playing with the Flyers, and the Flyers seemed a little disappointed that they didn't beat the Canadiens better. And maybe that changes over the course of the series. You know, you can never predict the ebbs and flows of a series. Maybe Canadiens win games two and three, and then both teams have a totally different mentality of the other's quality. But there is definitely, you know, maybe a feeling right now that the Flyers know that they are the best team, the better team in the series, and then the Canadiens also know that the Flyers are the best team in the series, which maybe isn't the right mentality for Montreal to have. But I'm also not a head coach, so I maybe shouldn't be too critical.
We made a big deal out of the Carey Price Carter Hart storylines before that series started. How much of an impact do you guys think that Carter Hart had in the in game one?
I think he had a huge impact. I mean, they got out of that second period unscathed largely because of Carter Hart. I mean, he wasn't forced into a ton of impossible saves, but he had a lot of difficult saves that he had to make. And again, the similarity is striking. It's as two guys here who have covered the entirety of Carey Price's career. You know, Carter Hart makes a lot of saves that are difficult look very easy, just like Carey Price does. And I think a lot of those saves in the second period might have looked easy, but they weren't. They were point-blank saves, point-blank opportunities off of turnovers. The Flyers, as Charlie mentioned, were so careless with the puck, and the Canadians were hell-bent on pressuring them into those turnovers. But it resulted in a good number of, you know, pretty high-quality scoring opportunities, and Carter Hart was there every time. You know, I think of... like, you know, he had a little bit of luck, I guess. I mean, you know, that Gallagher wraparound that sort of rolled off his back and out instead of in was, I guess, the one occasion in that second period I could think of where he got maybe a little bit lucky. But other than that, he was just solid. And he was solid at a time that his team really needed him to be, because they were not solid at that time. They seemed to be reeling. And, man, that period could have turned out a lot different if Carter Hart did not play the way he did.
Yeah, I think this was a really good test for Carter Hart, because obviously, you know, he just turned 22 today. He was 21 last night's game. This was his first real playoff game. The round robin, I know they were considered playoff games, but this was the first real playoff game that Carter Hart was in. So there's that pressure of this is your first time in the NHL postseason, and then you're playing as a team that's entire offensive philosophy is based around the idea of making goalies miserable. You know, shooting from all these angles, second chance opportunities, getting in front of the net and basically jostling a goalie. That's how the Canadians play. And in a way, that's almost...
That's how they're being asked to play.
It's being asked to play. Fair, fair. But in a way, that's almost more... It could be more rattling to a young goalie than playing against a super high-skilled team in your first ever playoff game, because you're not able to just sit back and watch the shots. And they all just be, you know, coming from... You know, yeah, they're difficult shots from high-quality scorers, but they're shots that you can expect. I think Montreal plays a game where they try to surprise, you know, goalies with chances they might not necessarily expect to see. And the fact that Hart was able to not just play well, but play extremely well, you know, under those circumstances in his first playoff game, you know, for the Flyers, it's got to give them a lot of confidence to know that they don't have to worry about Carter Hart in this playoff series based on the way he played in game one.
The Athletic Support is brought to you in part by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Now, this is big news because Manscaped has just launched in Canada, so you, the Athletic Support listeners, have an opportunity to be one of the first in Canada to experience just what is Manscaped. Now, they've redesigned their electric trimmer to make the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created. That's right, I said that, ball hair trimmer ever created. And their new and improved Lawnmower 3.0. This third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce manscaping accidents. And when I say premium, I mean premium. This battery lasts up to 90 minutes, so you can take a longer shave. It's water resistant, so you can take it in the shower. It has a little LED light, so you can see what you're doing down there. And a 7,000 RPM motor, which is no joke. So if you're listening to me right now and you're intrigued, you're in luck, because you can get 20% off and free shipping with the promo code THEATHLETIC20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com, and use the promo code THEATHLETIC20. And for a limited time, subscribers get not one, but two free gifts. That's right, two. You get a travel bag, $39 value, and the patented high-performance anti-chafing Manscaped boxer briefs. So go to manscaped.com today and use the code THEATHLETIC20. And now a message from Indochino. Moving on to game two now. You know, quick turnaround. It's going to be a 3 o'clock game. Obviously, the Canadians are going to be in a different mental place with all this that happened with Claude on Thursday. I'm curious to know, Marc-Antoine, actually, let's start with you in terms of what do you expect the Canadians to do adjustment-wise? Because obviously now the coaching dynamic has changed, but, you know, forgetting that, what do you think the Canadians should do in terms of adjustments for game two?
Well, what they will do and what they should do, I think, are two different things. The Canadians' third pairing had a rough night in game one with Victor Mete and Xavier Ouellette there. And I would like to see a change there. And probably that's where, if Kurt Muller thinks the same, it'd be interesting to see if it's going to be one of those occasions where the assistant coach says, well, if I was the head coach, I would do this and this differently. Well, will he have like the carte blanche to make that sort of decision, that make that sort of call by himself, which might not be the same way that that Claude Julien would see things. But it's probably, you know, I know that what I get is that Xavier Ouellet, one of the main reasons he's in the lineup is because of his ability to play on PK. Claude Julien had been looking for a fourth defenseman to play on the PK and be reliable in that role, something that either Brett Kulak, Mete, or Cale Fleury during the regular season had not really shown capable of doing. So that's one of the reasons why he's in the lineup. But maybe that it could be an interesting time to try Noah Jolson. Noah Jolson has not been in a competitive game apart from this one right before COVID started in the American League. He hasn't been in the NHL for over a year, but I think that it would be an interesting experiment to throw this guy in the wolves, if you want, and have him face his former teammate, because Carter Hart and he have been teammates for over 3 years in Everett. And I think that the Canadiens, they need to see what they got. I think that they've tested a few different combinations with the personnel that they're most familiar with. But I think that if they want to get something more out of the whole group, I think that trying an experiment either on defense or even at forward by bringing a kid like Ryan Poehling, just to give a different look to the fourth line and give some a different vibe, I think it would be the right time to do so, because they need something to happen. But at the same time, they don't want to wait too late and after they've dug themselves into too big of a hole. That being said, and I'll finish that way with that, the biggest change will be behind the bench. And probably that any lineup change would not have the impact that Claude not being there will have on the Canadiens. So if you're looking for something different for tomorrow afternoon, well, let's look with the coach not being the same.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say about that, and obviously I'm coming at this from an outsider's perspective, but speaking to what we were talking about earlier, the games within the games within the series, I kind of wonder if, you know, obviously the narrative coming out of last night's game was that we know we can play with these guys. You know, we learned that we're on their level, we can play with them. I wonder the message it sends to your team after you told them that, you know, we proved to ourselves we can play with them, if you then make some lineup changes. I almost wonder if the way that it's been positioned to the players that we showed we're right with them in game one, I almost wonder if you've sort of set yourself up where you kind of have to run it back, because you have to give them a chance to prove that game one wasn't a fluke and we're actually on this team's level. If you start making changes, maybe that sends the message to the players that, you know, you said we're on their level, but you pulled two guys out of lineup, so clearly we're not on their level because you had to make those changes.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I do. I think that's what I expect. I mean, the way, listening to Claude speak after the game, he did not sound like he normally does after a loss. He seemed not satisfied. He made a point to say, I'm not satisfied, but he seemed at ease with what he saw his team do on the ice, and that was something that they could potentially build on. I don't disagree with what you suggest, Marc-Antoine, and again, this is a question of what they will and what they should. It's clear to me that they do need a new defenseman on the third pairing. They could use some more speed, which they have sitting there on their fourth line, and Max Domi needs some sort of lifeline of some sort. He needs someone to play with, and so, you know, that now falls on Kirk Muller to figure that whole thing out. But Charlie, I'm curious what you anticipate from the Flyers here, because, you know, I feel there are some sort of unresolved, you know, there's the whole Gostisbehere-Hague thing. I know. I thought Gossespierre was okay. I guess he was pretty good. I don't know. It's sort of unspectacular, but what, and obviously the JVR on sort of the fourth line, and there's all sorts, there's some things going on that team. Do you anticipate them coming back intact after their, you know, kind of in the same way that the point that you made, you listen to the Flyers, they seem somewhat unsatisfied with the way they handled everything. Do you think that they switch something up in order to address that?
Yeah, that's a fascinating question. And honestly, I wasn't sure until we talked to Vigneault today. And especially with the forwards, it sounds like he's relatively happy. You know, he seemed, he was praising Jake Voracek for his work playing, you know, an unfamiliar position. He's playing the left side. He's basically a natural right winger who likes to play the off wing. He was playing the left side last night, and Vigneault praised him. He said he really liked his game, and he had a fair amount of praise for James Van Riemsdyk and that fourth line and its ability to create chances. Obviously, you know, Nate Thompson missed a couple open nets, but they still created the chances to give him the opportunity to have those open nets. Yeah. So my read is that they're not going to change the forwards. I could be wrong, but that's what I took from that media availability. The defense is more interesting, just because I do believe they think that, you know, Ghost and Haig, it's close. You know, those guys provide similar value just in different ways. If I had to bet, I would bet Ghost stays in because I don't think Ghost played poorly. I don't think he played well. I just think he was okay.
He was there.
He made some plays.
He was just kind of there, yeah.
Yeah, he made some plays. He made some mistakes. Maybe he was a slight net positive, but he didn't dominate by any means. And really what the question is whether he had to continue to dominate to stay in the lineup, because through most of phase three training camp, and even through most of the round robin games, Robert Haig seemed to have a leg up on Shane Gossespierre in terms of being the number six. Ghost had a great game on Saturday against Tampa, and that seemed to, you know, get him to push his way into the lineup. But it'll be interesting to see if they stick with Gossespierre, because it'll show whether Gossespierre actually jumped Robert Haig on the depth chart, or if they just thought they were going to kind of try to ride the wave of what seemed like the return of the old Gossespierre on Saturday. And because he didn't replicate that, it's like, okay, well, now let's just go back to the safe guy in Haig.
Another change that I'm curious to see on the Montreal side might be forced by yesterday's events, because Yoel Armia played a lot less than usual in the third period, and he ended up not playing in the last, what, 7 or 8 minutes of the game. There was at least late in the game, there was a key shift of his line where he was replaced by Max Domi. And, you know, rewatching the tape after the game, I realized that at the tail end of the second period, he was slashed by Nate Thompson and clear on the right hand, and clearly he seemed to get hurt. So I don't know how much of a factor this will be, if it's going to linger in any way. But after the game yesterday, when Claude Julien was asked about these lineup changes, well, these line changes and Domi replacing him for a couple of shifts, Julien said that there were things that he could not talk about. So obviously we all know the environment right now in the bubble and the whole whole omerta regarding the injuries and also the COVID situation. But I wonder if that's what he was referring to the fact that there was an injury related situation with Armia that made him, you know, less effective and not as available. So I guess it's a storyline to see if tomorrow afternoon there's going to be a change made because of that, or if Armia will be just ready to go.
That's a good point. I don't know. We'll see. And you know, there's obviously the bigger issue for the Canadians is I think Armia is included in the group of forwards who have just underperformed since the start of the playoffs. And now, you know, I was thinking Claude Julien is going to need to find a way to light a fire under these guys, and now that falls on Kirk Muller. So we'll see how that goes. But Charlie, before we wrap up here, I just want to, I think there's, you know, I might be wrong, but, you know, I think a lot of our listeners probably don't appreciate how good Ivan Provorov is, and they're gonna get like a crash course in this now. Probably the most underrated, like least talked about, really super talented young player in the league, among them, you know, like there's a lot of guys that fall under the radar for some reason outside of Philadelphia, or I don't even know, maybe even in Philadelphia, he seems to, because to me, to do what he does at his age, play the minutes he plays, and the role that he fills on that team is remarkable. And he's one of my favorite guys to watch play. Like, what has been your perspective of his ascension to this place in his career so early in his career?
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you, number one, that Philadelphia fans definitely don't take him for granted. They love Ivan Provorov. They love what he brings, and they understand how ridiculous it is that he's taking on this kind of role at such a young age. I do think what maybe hurt him in terms of national recognition was just the trajectory of his career, because he had a real promising rookie year. And then his second season, he looked like that was the breakout season. He scored a lot of goals. He was the number one defenseman on a playoff team. You know, he looked like he was on the verge of superstardom, or at least stardom. And then last season, he had a really, really underwhelming year. And I think that really killed a lot of the momentum that he had built up nationally, because people were ready to kind of elevate him into that dark horse for the Norris type, you know, type discussion. And then he really struggled in 2018, 2019. And that kind of pushed him down the food chain, especially because you've had so many great young defensemen come up that he just kind of fell down a little bit. And then this year he came back and he really got things back on track. You know, I think he's really built a strong rapport with the new coaching staff. He's built a great rapport with his regular partner, Matt Niskanen, which turned out to be a brilliant acquisition by general manager Chuck Fletcher in the offseason, just giving him a stable veteran partner that he can rely on for the first time in his career. And I just think the fact that he had such a strong year this season maybe went a little unnoticed nationally, because there was still that residual effect from how underwhelming the previous season was, and that kind of killed that consistent upward trajectory that I think a lot of people look for. But I thought he was really good last night. He made some mistakes, but the fact of the matter is that I thought one of the more underwhelming players in the Flyers, period, was Matt Niskanen, who has been great for them this season, but didn't have a particularly great game against Tampa in the final round robin, and really had a bunch of mistakes last night. So the fact that that pairing was even able to, you know, hang on for dear life with one guy just not at his best, I think a lot of that can be laid at the feet of Ivan Provorov, because he was carrying that duo last night. Let me put it that way. I was surprised at how underwhelming Matt Niskanen looked, because that just hasn't been how he's played all year. And the Flyers are really lucky to have Provorov mostly firing on all cylinders, because if he wasn't, Montreal could have ran away with that one.
Well, for those who are not very familiar with Provorov, all you need to do is turn on TV and watch the game, because he's always on the ice. 25 minutes a game, plays on top pairing on the PK, top pairing on the power play. You know, is matched up against the opposing best line, and he's also dynamic. He'll join the rush and support the attack when it's needed. He picks his spots, but he's really dangerous. When he wants to be, I think he is a treat to watch, and he's going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, I agree. I took him in my playoff pool, so I'm happy. He's my Flyers representative. Listen, guys, I think we're gonna wrap it up, but I mean, I'm really fascinated to see how, you know, this whole situation with Claude going to the hospital, I'm really fascinated to see what, if any, impact that has on the Canadiens as far as their first period goes, because, you know, this season, the best period for the Canadiens has traditionally been the first period. They start games really well. They don't manage to score very often, and they often actually trail after the first period, or at least tied. And then that sort of peters out as the game goes along. That's why I was so surprised to see them come out so meekly in the first period of game one and survive it, frankly, because I think even the Flyers maybe weren't at their best in that first period either. So really interested to see how this carries over into game two tomorrow. But, you know, the one thing I want to get from you, Charlie, actually, is because I think this was an interesting dynamic in the Pittsburgh series, is this sense that the Penguins you know, when phase two began, Sidney Crosby like had all the Penguins come back to Pittsburgh. They were all there. He was running practices. They were doing drills. It was like basically an extended training camp for them, because that's they recognized that they were in a window to win and they wanted to win that badly. And so then as soon as things didn't go their way in that series against Montreal, they crumbled, because I don't think they really anticipated that being an issue. I'm just wondering, Charlie, this team doesn't have the same dynamic. It's a much younger team. A lot of their key players are young. A lot of them are experiencing the playoffs for the first time. So it's really not, it doesn't seem to me like their window is just opening as opposed to one that's closing. And so, you know, what's the sense you get among like of the expectations of this group of Flyers players and the coaching staff as far as, you know, what they, there's obviously everyone hopes to do something, but what do they tangibly expect to do in these playoffs?
I think it was Niskanen actually, who a couple days into camp did a really good job of explaining this. And obviously I'm paraphrasing, but he essentially said, and obviously he won a Stanley Cup with the Washington Capitals. He's the only Flyers player who has a ring. He said that he felt like the Flyers were in a really good spot in terms of expectations, because they're not underdogs, but there's also not a feeling that if they don't win, that everything's going to be blown up because they kind of have to win. And he's speaking from experience, obviously, because there were multiple seasons where the Washington Capitals had that expectation that this is your last chance, or this is the year where you have to win it all. And he said that those expectations legitimately hurt that team. And it was no coincidence that the year they won was the year that maybe people didn't expect them to win. It was just a little bit lower. The pressure was just a bit lower. They were still one of the teams that were maybe the six or seven favorites, but they weren't the team anymore, the team that was supposed to win it all. And Niskanen said that he felt like the Flyers were in a good spot with regards to expectations, that they were kind of in that happy middle where if they lose, it's not the total end of the world, but there's a feeling in that locker room that they absolutely can win it all. They don't feel overmatched. And I think it's a good place to be for the Flyers. Not to say you can't win with expectations, but I think the Flyers are in a good spot. As you said, there's a mix of veterans and young talent that maybe doesn't know any better. Really, the only guys who I wondered might come in a little bit tight were the guys who have been on this team for a long time and have waited a really long time for this chance. You know, guys like Claude Giroux, guys like Jake Voracek, who kind of dealt with the down years throughout most of the 2010s and now finally have an opportunity to win a cup while they're still very good players. You know, Claude Giroux is 32 years old. Jake Voracek, I believe, is either 31 or turns 31. I'm not quite sure what his birthday is. I believe it's in August. But those are guys that waited for this. And those are the guys that I wondered might play a little tight because they know they might not have too many more cracks at this thing. But I think on the whole, the team is in a good spot from an expectation standpoint, as Niskanen said, kind of being in that middle ground between, you know, believing you can win, but not necessarily having to win or it's the end of the world.
It's a little bit, yeah, in that sense, they position themselves a little bit like Carolina or Colorado, you know, up and coming teams that have years of an open window in front of them. So it's and it's interesting when you got guys that are capable veterans that are still able to contribute as much as guys like Giroux and Voracek, but having all those young guys coming in and have an impact already, I think that there's a balance there that's really interesting, and that really bodes well for them. And frankly, I'm a little bit jealous.
Well, honestly, I look at the Flyers and I see like the Flyers are more or less what the Canadiens are trying to do now. And they're not quite there yet, but I think they hope that in 2 years from now, all these players that they've drafted, like they're going to have these guys in their early 20s making impacts like a Konechny or a Farabee or, you know, any number of guys in that lineup, you know, Lawton. The Canadiens are hopeful that they will have those three tiers of players where you have the veteran guys that are leading. You have the contributors who are really young on entry, like, you know, Carter Hart, obviously I forgot to mention there, but also those middle guys, like, you know, in this case, you know, the Hayes, JVR, these sort of like young veteran types that the Canadiens have in Gallagher and Deneau and that. And so I look at the makeup of the Flyers and I can't help but think like, this is what the Canadiens aspire to be. which is like another dynamic in the series that I find interesting. But if all goes well for this Canadiens reset, I think they would look a lot like the Flyers do right now, 2 years from now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Sorry, I think... Yeah. Okay.
I thought that Charlie would pick it up on
that. That's a good way to end the podcast. When I leave everyone speechless is when we end the podcast. So we're going to wrap that up. Obviously, game two is 3 o'clock on Friday. Be sure and watch that. And for those of you who have not subscribed to The Athletic yet, what are you waiting for? Charlie's obviously pumping out great stuff on the Flyers. Marc Antoine and I are writing every day on the Canadiens. You can get your first year subscription for 40% off just for the Athletic Support listeners by going to theathletic.com/athletic support. That is theathletic.com/athletic support. Gets you 40% off your first year subscription. Charlie, thank you so much for joining us, and maybe we could do this again before the series ends.
Yeah, I had a blast, and thanks for having me. It was a good conversation.
All right, and our thoughts are with Claude, so take care, Claude. On se revoit bientôt. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, everybody, and we'll talk to you later.